would say school doesn't matter as much as how awful you feel. And I think that like helped me realize, you know, especially through my whole, you know, anxiety journey, that, you know, it doesn't, like, thinking about it as it doesn't matter as much as I built it up in my head really helped me get back there and just, you know, get it done at least. Because I really was struggling, I was floundering, and because I cared so much and I thought about it so much, and, you know, it was so huge in my head that just that saying, like, it doesn't matter as much as you think it does.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. This is Dr. John Duffy. As always, I so appreciate you protecting a little time to hang out with me and my guests. I promise you I don't take it for granted. My guest today is a guy, a very interesting guy, a really bright, well-spoken guy who is going to tell us a little bit of a harrowing story. Matthew, welcome, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, seriously. He's going to share with us how sometimes a whole bunch of adults, from parents to counselors to police to teachers to administrators, can get it all wrong. And the kind of fairly dire, grave consequences of that. And maybe even you can shine a light at some point on how we can get it right for the next kid who's down the line somewhere. So welcome again. And if you don't mind, let's tell your story. So I think you told me it all starts right around eighth grade. Things go pretty smoothly up till then?
Yeah. Yep. Smoothly.
Okay. All right. So what happens in eighth grade? What's different? You're a smart guy. You do well in school. You're a musician, right?
Yes.
So things go pretty smoothly in life up till then, yeah?
Yep.
Okay. So what happens? Eighth grade.
In eighth grade, I just began to not go to school, and I didn't really understand why at the time. So I would just, I remember what sparked it all is I got sick, and that obviously causes you to miss school, and I remember I just didn't want to go back after that.
Right.
So I didn't for a long period of time. I would go back occasionally, you know, just for a few days, but then end up not going.
Yeah.
And then I would, you know, everyone was kind of freaking out about that, and I thought I was fine. I didn't understand what the whole issue was.
You did think you were fine?
Yeah.
So you were missing a fairly regular amount of school, mm-hmm. more than you'd ever missed before. You weren't worried about this. Didn't concern you.
It didn't concern me. I thought, you know, I just didn't want to go to school, and I, you know, I didn't feel, you know, any certain type of way that would, you know, like, I didn't feel depressed or, like, anything like that. And I barely knew what depressed meant at the time.
Right. Matt, by the way, Matthew is a recent high school graduate. Mm-hmm. And so this goes back about 5 years. So if I can interrupt for a second. Mm-hmm. Right around that time, in my profession, we were starting to talk about this new diagnosis. And I have massive air quotes around this diagnosis called school refusal. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you were, if not right there in terms of meeting the criteria for refusing to go to school, you were pretty close.
Yes.
Right? So did anyone accuse you of being a school refusal diagnosee?
A couple of people did. And towards the end of eighth grade, you know, when all the missing was happening, like had happened for a period of time already.
Yeah.
There was an incident, I would say, where, like, my parents brought me to, like, a doctor, and I was very afraid of doctors, which I now realize was anxiety at the time, but I was very anxious to go to the doctors because I just didn't like them and still don't. But mm-hmm. anyways, they hauled me off to a Alexian Brothers Institute.
Right, right. So an inpatient hospital.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And thank God I didn't have to stay, but they wanted to keep me there to go to a special school refusal program to stay there. I don't really know what it was. Don't really remember. It was a very hectic moment for me.
And you were young, right? At 14 years old, who knows what a school refusal program is in the hospital, right?
I think I was 13 or 12. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was obviously, you know, terrifying. And I knew that's not where I wanted to be or where I should be, mm-hmm. really, because that would just make me, you know, more anxious. And I didn't even know what anxiety was, but I knew that that's not, that was not going to be conducive to helping me get back to school.
Out of fairness to the adults involved, though, here we've got this really bright guy who's kind of killing it through middle school, doing really well, showing up every day, who suddenly doesn't want to go to school. And I hear your point, like, well, I just thought I didn't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. But it feels, behaviorally, it feels like a pretty big departure. I can see where you suddenly have everyone's attention. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder what's going on with Matthew. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he was here every day in seventh grade. He might have missed a day or two because he had the flu or something. Mm-hmm. But now, all of a sudden, he's missing some percentage.
Yeah, definitely.
Fairly significant percentage of the days. I can understand, out of fairness to them, I can understand the concern, yeah?
Yeah, I definitely do, especially I understand it the most in the beginning in eighth grade when there wasn't really any explanation, you know, even from me, because I didn't understand it myself.
Right.
So I couldn't really offer any kind of, you know, insight into how they could help. And so I understand that aspect that they were, you know, just trying to, like, make sense of it all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you go to this program. They don't put you inpatient, but you're part of this program for a while?
No, I actually never went back.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
I stayed there for, I think a couple of hours. And I went home, and I was obviously very angry at them.
At your parents?
Yeah, and more disappointed, I think. But yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Disappointed why?
Just that they would do that to me, because I really didn't, like, it was very tunnel vision, like, how, like, could you do that, you know, because it was so different from kind of everything that I've experienced before.
With them?
Yeah.
So somehow this was traumatic to you. Mm-hmm. I can imagine if I had your mom and dad flanking you right now and I asked them, they'd say, oh, no, that the last thing we wanted to do was traumatize Matthew. Yeah. We just were trying to solve a problem. Yeah,
yeah? Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think just the main thing that really kind of, like, set me off during that, like, encounter or experience was that, like, my anxiety is very, like, control. Like, that's the main part of it.
Maintaining control,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, so if I'm, like, backed against a corner and I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything, and there's nothing, it just really, like, triggers my anxiety to, like, the next level. And obviously, I couldn't go anywhere. You know, I couldn't leave. You know, they were, you know, dragging me somewhere I've never been to before.
So here you are. You're an anxious kid. You're in eighth grade. Something's going on. And you're probably, I hear it now that you recognize in retrospect, I was an anxious kid, but you didn't have a word for it then.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I can relate to that. Yeah. I was about the same age. I felt the same way. And that's there's nothing more frightening. Mm-hmm. And if control is part of the formula that you use to manage your anxiety, I can imagine, like, the threat of being in a place where you have no control over what you do moment to moment, and you don't even know what's on the other side of the doors, right? There's locked doors there, and you don't know what's going to happen if you end up hospitalized. Mm-hmm. I get where that had to be frightening. Do you think any part of this, every once in a while I work with a family where the threat of hospitalization is almost like scared straight. It's almost like I'm going to scare my child into behaving more appropriately and getting to school, so I'll let them know I am serious enough about this to take you to the hospital. You know, is there any of that anxiety from your parents? Like, we don't know what to do, so we're going to levy this threat and make it seem very serious?
I don't know. I don't know if it was a threat or intentional like that. I mean, there was definitely, I think there was one instance before that where we went to random clinic, you know, that looked like a mental hospital.
Right.
And it was, they tried to get me inpatient there as well, but they said that since I wasn't suicidal or, like, you know, homicidal or something, they wouldn't admit me.
Right.
Which, you know, thank God for that. But, so I don't think it was, like, an intended, like, fear, just try to scare me into going back.
Take me into your head around that time. So I get what everybody else sees, right? Everybody else sees a behavior that's shifted, right, and is trying to get you to reverse and get back to school. In your 12, 13, 14-year-old mind, what was going on?
I had no idea. You know, I was just, you know, I knew that I felt bad going to school, and I knew that, like, the remedy to that was to not go to school. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty, you know, black and white for me, you know, like, one place I'll, you know, I won't like it, and one place I'll be comfortable.
Right.
And I won't, you know, have bad feelings. And I genuinely, I know anxiety manifests itself in, like, a bunch of different ways, and it's different for everyone, but mainly for me, it feels like I'm gonna, like, vomit. Like, you know how, like, all the blood runs to your stomach and, like, you just, like, want to curl up in a ball and you think you're, like, vomit or something?
Yeah, yeah.
That's, like, that's a main part of it for me. So I thought I was genuinely sick. Like, I thought I was, like, ill and I couldn't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, yeah.
So when you tell your parents in the morning, I can't go today, I have a stomach ache, yeah. I feel like I'm gonna be sick.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't making that up, you
no,
know, like yeah. kids play sick, you know, yeah. like, and that's mm-hmm. the easy, that's the easy little diagnostic mm-hmm. thing to pick is like, oh, I have a really bad stomach mm-hmm. ache or a really bad headache. You really did.
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. And anxiety, you're right, is sneaky that mm-hmm. way. It creates and sticks with an internal feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can really make you feel like the symptoms real and like you're going to be sick, you're mm-hmm. going to throw up, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did it ever happen, by the way? Did your worst fear ever take place?
No, well, I never actually vomited or got sick from it. Like, it obviously did feel like as real as it could have, but no, I didn't actually ever.
It speaks to the power of anxiety, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Mine was always that I was going to pass out, mm-hmm. you know, and this went on for years, decades actually. And, it never happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, but, you know, like, perpetually in certain circumstances, I always thought, like, well, it's definitely going to happen this time, you know, even
yeah.
though you have anxiety doesn't need a whole lot of evidence mm-hmm. to make you afraid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, so eighth grade doesn't go particularly well, and you miss, do you know roughly how much school you missed that year?
It started in the second semester. So, like, January time.
Yeah, January-ish.
So,
yeah.
And then it was pretty much like almost most of the days from January on until, you know, May
yeah.
or something. So yeah, it was probably the like a really good portion of the days.
So when we talk about school refusal, we're talking well over half the days you were gone from school.
I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know, but yeah.
What would happen on a day? I like exceptions. I'm always curious about them. Some days you went, not many, but mm-hmm. some.
Yeah.
Why were you ever willing to go? And so if you were anxious mm-hmm. about going into the building,
mm-hmm.
why was there ever a morning where that was reversed, where it was okay?
Well, there were some times where I felt that the confrontation wouldn't be there,
mm.
which is also like a huge source of my anxiety. Just like the confrontation with teachers that like you've disappointed or that I've, you know, in my mind, I thought I disappointed or that something like that or a principal or a counselor. So if I thought like maybe that wasn't there, then that could just get me over the hump enough to go. Or if there was like, you know, maybe like a friend or something,
mm-hmm.
but that was like rare as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, part of the reason I wanted you in here is I think your story dispels myths. And one of the myths that I think a lot of us in my generation carry is, oh, the kid who refuses to go to school doesn't care. They've opted out.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, it's quite the contrary. It feels to me, and correct me if I'm missing it here, that you cared so deeply about what your teachers thought and mm-hmm. what your peers thought that was part of the reason mm-hmm. you didn't go the next
yeah.
day.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That was a huge part of it, that I cared so much about what other people thought of me and that I wouldn't go. And like people, I hated when I would go back, you know, for those, you know, odd days or whatever. And they'd be like, oh, where have you been and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain, but I, you know, I couldn't explain it because I didn't understand it myself, so I just, you know, sometimes just like lied about random stuff or you know, because I didn't have anything to tell them, and it just made me more anxious having to explain
yeah.
you know, my, you know, anxiety at the time. So
seems like it would get worse with every passing day in
yeah.
a way.
Yeah,
would it
did yeah
yeah
definitely.
And I think about the stories I hear from middle school kids or high school kids reflecting on middle school and how socially it is so brutal in so many ways. And, you know, I don't know that I've talked to anybody who would go back to middle school. People would go back to high school maybe. And here you have this added element of this anxiety that you don't even have a name for yet that is taking you out of the game altogether. I can imagine you felt horrible a lot of the time, yeah?
Yeah, I felt bad, but like I'm really, my brain is really good at like compartmentalizing like the you know how extensive the situation is and like the awfulness of it. So I just like kind of went after a certain time, just it became the norm, and I kind of was just numb to it at a point. Like I was just doing my own thing at home, you know, watching documentaries and kind of like learning things on my own, which was kind of strange, but still.
So you were an active learner, actually.
Yeah, still, you know, yeah. Still like read books and do all this stuff, you know, obviously things that I wanted to learn, but yeah, so I just kind of, it became the norm for me. Yeah.
So what probably looked like a kid who had decided, I am defiant and screw you guys, I'm not going anymore, is actually a kid who's just compartmentalized because almost out of necessity, right? Because if every day you were like, you know, worried and thinking about whether I'm going to go or not, the anxiety would have been worse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So was that kind of an adaptive thing? Are you kind of glad you were a compartmentalizer then?
Yeah, I feel like I would have like broke down just like way more, you know, just like having to experience like every single day, like, you know, I was still anxious like every morning when they're like, come on, get out of, you know, my parents were like, get out of bed, go to school. You know, I was still anxious that morning. But I just can't even imagine like if I hadn't, you know, kind of reassessed and, it, you know, compartmentalized like all like that whole situation, then how awful like I could have felt in the moment.
Mm-hmm. And yet, And I get that, and in a way I get where emotionally that seems pretty healthy. It doesn't solve the problem of Matthew's not going to school, right? I mean, no, you know, exactly. So that still lingers. Take us forward in the story, because I suspect we get to that.
Yeah.
How does high school go for you?
Well, freshman year, the first year was okay. It wasn't good, but you know,
did you make it to school more than you did the year before?
Yeah, more, but I still missed a lot of days.
Right.
You know, more than probably any other kid. Yeah, it was okay. You know, I was still anxious. I still didn't know what anxiety was.
Right.
I was still confused because I remember, like, when I was little and, you know, the people used, like, anxious as, like, an excited.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of threw me through a loop with, you know, figuring out my anxiety. But, yeah, so I didn't understand anxiety. I didn't, like, realize it until sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And I did miss a lot of days sophomore year as well.
Can I stop you for a sec?
Yeah.
I like that point you made. You know, I think a lot of the people who I've been talking to, your age, give or take a few years, have come in here, and I think you have too, to dispel some stigma, right? And I think you make a really good point about the word anxiety and the word anxious. We don't teach our kids what these things mean, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just like a generation ago, I didn't know what I was looking at. And I thought there's something really terribly wrong with me and I'm the only guy suffering it. You make a good point. When we first hear that word or read that word, it usually doesn't have a negative connotation at all. Usually it means like, you know, I'm anxious to get to the, you know, carnival, right?
Yeah,
I'm excited about something, right? How did you figure out, you know, in the age of Google and everything else and people talking to each other in very direct ways about some of these things, when did it hit you? Do you remember when it hit you like, oh, I think I know what this means. I think I this is something I suffer.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was sophomore year. And I remember just like, you know, browsing through YouTube or something because I was bored or I was, you know, trying to fill time. So I was looking, I came across like this popular YouTuber, Zoella, that I'd never heard of before because I'd never been into, you know, like those YouTube stars or anything.
Right.
And I saw her speaking about anxiety, and I just remember something clicked that I didn't realize that I didn't realize someone else out there was suffering from the same symptoms or the same feelings that I had. So that just really like resonated with me, and I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I'm going through. Yeah.
I see relief in your face as you tell the story. Was that a great relief knowing, okay, I'm not the only guy?
Yeah, it was a great relief finally figuring out kind of everything behind, you know, like the reason, because I had no reason before. So I was like, I have no idea why I'm, you know, doing terribly in school because I'm not there.
Right.
But yeah, it was a relief to know that someone else out there was experiencing what I was, and it wasn't just like me, you know, not succeeding or anything like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so before that, was there an element of, geez, I think I'm a failure. I'm not doing well in school. So all the objective criteria by which we measure ourselves, I'm failing these. I'm not making it to a sport. I'm not. I'm in a band at school, but I'm not playing. You know, I'm not there to practice and rehearse.
Yeah. There was definitely an element of that, because after, you know, I've always been a strong-willed person, but after a while, like being that young and like having everyone tell you all these things about like what you are and like seeing all the grades that obviously, you know, don't reflect who I am, they definitely like weighed on me, like to, you know, to start believing what everyone was saying, you know. So.
That's another part of your story that strikes me is Matthew, I think you are often the smartest guy in the room. And yet, on paper, your resume, your transcript, your track record tells a very, very different story. What number did all of this play? And these diagnoses start showing up as well, right? Mm-hmm. Oppositional defiant disorder, right? Mm-hmm. Police come to your house at one point. Mm-hmm. ADHD, school refusal. You know, at some point, I would think, even the strongest guy is going to break down and start feeling not so great about himself. Mm-hmm. Did this hit your self-worth and self-esteem at some point?
Yeah, definitely. And I really, I was really, you know, happy, and I really prided myself on my grades pre all this anxiety and everything. Like in seventh grade, I got straight A's.
Yeah.
And I did so well in my math class. I got 100% and they bumped me up the next level. Like I skipped a level of math class the next year into eighth grade.
Appropriately, right? Yeah. You earned that and you were smart enough and you knew you could handle that next class.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And so seeing the like drastic shift from straight A's to no A's, you know, or, you know, worse, was really like, you know, slap in the face, like I hit a concrete wall.
Right.
You know.
So from an adult point of view, all these people I was highlighting earlier, you know, this village people looking group of people like trying to intervene and fix things, and all these diagnoses that are falling your way, everybody trying to fit the round peg in the round hole. Did everybody miss it? Did anyone understand what you were going through at any point in the journey?
I saw 9 different psychologists, psychiatrists before, you know, I reached this point.
Nine. I mean, that alone, so I'm putting myself in your shoes. I'm thinking if one after another says, well, I'm not sure what's wrong with this guy or I can't help him. Mm-hmm. Do you ever start to think, maybe there's something really terribly wrong and I'm not fixable?
Yeah, well, I definitely thought that, but, you know, I kind of knew that it wasn't just, like, me, like, that was the issue, like, that everyone just kind of, their helping, quote-unquote, was kind of making it worse, and so I always knew kind of deep down that I had some kind of faith in myself, but it was, you know, overshadowed greatly by all the, like, negative and just the diagnoses they were pinning on me, you know,
just like
there's post-it note after post-it note on my back there. So, yeah.
Oof, that's a rough image.
Yeah.
Post-it note with a diagnosis. Yeah. Everybody's got their thing. Mm-hmm. And so how, you know, being a psychologist myself, how bad a patient were you? I mean, given once a post-it note's on your back, how disagreeable are you to work with?
I was always, you know, cordial, and I've always been polite, but you know, I racked them all up, so I mean, it would have been you know, like a Chernobyl disaster to work with me, apparently, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you go through your 9 courses of therapy. Mm-hmm. Does anything change perceptibly? Like you said, okay, I started going to school a little bit more freshman year, sophomore year not so great. You know, as junior and senior year approach, does anything strike you? Does anything help? Do you ever feel understood between, you know, 8th grade and high school graduation, mm-hmm. let's say?
Well, obviously, I went to counseling or therapy with my parents, like, this whole time through the 9 psychologists, and I never felt comfortable speaking about, like, myself with them in the room, so nothing really got done through freshman, sophomore year, even junior year, like, the pretty much most of junior year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just never really felt comfortable speaking with them. So once I, kicked them out of the room, essentially, then I got to, like, make actual progress.
Right.
You know, just learning about myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you almost had to follow your instinct that I need this to be a one-on-one thing. Mm-hmm. I need to work this through mm-hmm. on my own. What is it that you think, looking back on all of it, what is it that you think you needed that you didn't get?
I think I needed more self-confidence, obviously. That's still an issue that I struggle with today, but, I mean, that never hurts.
Sure.
And I think I just needed someone to kind of listen and kind of understand, you know, what I was going through. And maybe, like, I mean, that wouldn't have changed everything, you know, dramatically and instantly. But it would have, you know, gotten the process started and, like, way earlier than it did.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm picturing a parent out there in the ether listening to you and I on iTunes and thinking, well, my kid doesn't go to school or my kid's really anxious. And I try to listen and understand, mm-hmm. but he or she won't talk to me. Mm-hmm. Would you say, not knowing much more than that, would you say, well, that parent probably is doing it wrong or isn't really listening. They've got some kind of agenda or something. Like, you know, because I would imagine your parents,
they
gave a crack at this more than once, I'm sure, right?
I would say they gave a crack at it, but at least I always felt there was some kind of agenda. And I understand they wanted me to go back to school, but, I mean, what I was dealing with was more than school, especially at the time. So, and I think it's a big part that you have to go through the process yourself,
mm-hmm.
learning, like, what you suffer from and how you can remedy it yourself, you know, if it's, you know, be it just, like, a quick fix or something that you're anxious in that moment and you want to get through whatever you're doing, or, you know, obviously, like, long-term trying to just, like, understand your anxiety and, you know, minimize it as much as you can.
Right. Now, you've described, you know, what your anxious symptom was, that it was mm-hmm. like, you know, this stomach upset, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you reflect, not everybody who's anxious stops going to school mm-hmm. or stops, by and large, stops going to school. Do you know why that was an element of it? In other words, what were you anxious about? What was it about that building or those people in that building that made you anxious in the first place?
Well, definitely the one of the main things was the confrontation with the other people. That was a big issue of mine that I just kind of realized, you know, in the past year, actually, was, like, facing someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, who I thought I disappointed and, like, having to explain why I wasn't there and... No, I never felt really comfortable, barely felt comfortable speaking about my anxiety to, like, you know, my best friend, but let alone a teacher that I barely knew.
Right.
So it was hard for me to, like, explain that to them, and I rarely did, you know. So that was an issue. And, like, you know, the peer having explained to them and just, like, no one, and I knew that no one would really understand. I mean, you have to kind of go through it firsthand to know what an anxious person experiences every day. So the confrontation and especially the feeling of, like, being overwhelmed, especially after, well, you have to go back and remake all your work and do the current work, which was very, like, overwhelming, which made me more anxious. And, you know, and I'd be, you know, I'd be just, it, there'd be so much work to make up, and then I would have more work, and it would just pile up because I couldn't finish the past work or the present work. It was just a mess.
It sounds like a mess. It sounds incredibly frustrating and dispiriting. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the kind of mess you can't get out from underneath, especially as days pass and, mm-hmm. And you're in not the easiest classes. Mm-hmm. So does it, by the time you're a senior, does it ever get better? Do you ever feel like, okay, I'm good. I can go. I found my way to be comfortable with my peers. I found a way to be okay with these confrontations, or maybe I'm making the confrontation part up and maybe these teachers aren't as upset with me as I would think.
No, I mean, it never really got better. I mean, the whole time while I was at the, you know, my public school, it never got better, really. There was, like, pockets of time that were good, you know, but, like, small, you know, minute pockets of time there. And but the whole time, like, the majority of I was not getting better at all.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now let's jump back a few years. What could have happened differently at the beginning of the story that would have facilitated not just changing that behavior so that everyone could breathe because you were going to school? Mm-hmm. What could have eased the anxiety enough that you would have been comfortable with it? Mm-hmm. Do you know what you would have needed those years ago?
I can only imagine that maybe, like, pushing me, like, out the door more, like, just making me go and realizing that it's, that the fear wasn't actually there and it wasn't real, you know, and so that, like, my catastrophizing wasn't actually a reality, you know, especially doing that maybe in eighth grade when the stakes are very low. Mm. You know, there's not in high school when you need those grades, you know, from freshman year, the first day.
So in retrospect, you wish your parents had pushed you a little harder to get out of the house.
Well, that's what I think now, but, you know, seeing in the, you know, in the moment, I don't really know. Like, that might have helped. Like, it's the only thing I can really think of helping.
But yeah.
Even then, I think it might have been a little bit too late, you know, in my childhood to start kind of getting me to face my fears. Because at that point, I think I was pretty set in, you know, just avoiding my fears and running.
So you feel like, yeah, the behavior manifested around eighth grade. Mm-hmm. But I was probably anxious long before then. Mostly, did you need just an ear? You know, sometimes I think mostly, you know, for a lot of us who suffer anxiety or depression or most anything, loss, mm-hmm. grief, we just need somebody to hear us out. Mm-hmm. And we can kind of figure things out mm-hmm. on our own. Mm-hmm. You're a very, very smart, pretty enterprising guy, as we'll learn. you know, do you feel like that would have helped you if it was just the kind of a calm ear, no agenda, no posted on your back with a diagnosis, mm-hmm. just somebody listening, just hearing you out? Would that have made all the difference?
Yeah, I think it would have made a difference just you know, having someone, you know, they might not even understand.
Yeah.
You know, that would obviously help, you know, someone who has been anxious or has experienced it, but just someone that I could talk to and that I thought that would listen and, like, wouldn't think I was, you know, crazy or wouldn't think that I was just, you know, just lazy, you
yes.
know, more. So just someone to, like, that I could speak to and at least get it out, you know, at least get some of the, you know, frustrations out.
Without making assumptions?
Yeah.
Without assuming that Matthew's oppositional, Matthew's mm-hmm. just lazy, he doesn't want to go to school, without all that?
Yeah, I think people, especially, well, you know, for this whole, you know, 5 years have just looked at, like, my papers and, you know, kind of in that moment decided what I was before they actually met me or talked to me.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's the caution for, mm-hmm. for parents listening and, mm-hmm. and for kids listening is, you know, don't mm-hmm. don't make those assumptions,
yeah, don't
right?
Don't write someone off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm gonna put you in two uncomfortable spots, and then mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear what you would have to say. What do you say to the kid who is in eighth grade right now and is anxious, doesn't know it, or doesn't have a name for it, and being in school for whatever reason is part of what makes them anxious, and so the days are starting to accumulate. Is there a message you would have for that guy?
Well, this might be controversial, but I would say that it doesn't matter. I would say school doesn't matter as much as how awful you feel. And I think that, like, helped me realize, you know, especially through my whole, you know, anxiety journey, that, you know, it doesn't, like, thinking about it as it doesn't matter as much as I built it up in my head really helped me get back there and just, you know, get it done at least. Because I really was struggling. I was floundering, and because I cared so much and I thought about it so much, and, you know, it was so huge in my head that just saying, like, it doesn't matter as much as you think it does,
right,
you know, really, like, helps you over that first hump there.
So part of laying too much import on school and maybe on the social element and making it catastrophic and crisis-based makes a guy more reluctant to go.
Yeah.
And once you realize, oh, this isn't that big a deal. There's nothing life or death happening today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so going isn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not.
Yeah. And I think part of the controversy is not going isn't that big a deal either.
Yeah,
I think that's part of what you're saying too. All right. So my second question for you is, for whatever reason, we have assembled out in the hallway outside this room a group of parents of people between eighth grade and senior year in high school whose kids are anxious. What would you advise them to do that might help their kids navigate the rough waters of anxiety?
Well, I would say, try your hardest not to put them in anxious situations at home. Because, you know, a main part for me was the confrontation, but obviously when my parents would confront me about anxiety, then that would just make me more anxious.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't help. And the whole, like they would try to be like, oh, explain it to me, you know, whatever, but I couldn't explain it. So, you know, I would say, you know, the listening is a huge part, but just, you know, kind of also give them enough space to figure it out. You know, don't try to, you know, fix it so much that there's no room for them to figure it out themselves as well.
Give them an opportunity to prove themselves capable. Instead of doing for them or pressing too hard and helicoptering around it. Great advice. Can you tell us about senior year?
Yeah, well, junior year ended pretty badly, and I missed a lot of days, and then I was going into senior year, obviously hopeful, as I usually was, because I, you know, at the beginning of a new school year, because I really appreciated the, you know, what was kind of a new slate that I could...
The fresh start.
Yeah, the fresh start of the, like, you know, no grades. Yeah, so I...
So did you start every year hopeful?
Yeah.
Yeah. And was your plan every single time, like, this is going
to
be different?
Yeah, I never planned to, you know, stay in the same rut that I was.
Got it.
Ended up that way.
Yeah.
Almost every time.
Would you get a little honeymoon period? Would there be a few weeks at the beginning of every year where you'd be like, okay, I beat it this time?
Yeah, the first quarter, actually, of senior year, I got straight A's. So, because I was just, I don't know, I was committed, and I was ready to make that change.
Why? Why were you, not to be a jerk about it, but after all these years, you know, how is it that you decided, okay, I'm going to go to school every day, I'm going to make the change and meet the potential, and if you knew Matthew even a little bit, you'd know I'm talking to a straight A guy, not a few A's and a few B's or A's and one B. Matthew's one of the few guys I know where I can say pretty confidently, I think I'm sitting across from a straight A guy, and that's happening right now. So that quarter, first quarter, senior year, out of all the time you spent in high school, eighth grade, where that potential was never really met, you get straight A's out of nowhere. Just for a reference point, do you remember what your final grades were before that? What were your final grades at the end of junior year?
I think junior year actually, well, it's not really great comparison because that was probably my best year in high school to date.
Ah.
Well, because that best semester, I should say, in high school because I was just sick of it, I think, at that point. Mm. So I think, but still, I think it was like C's and then like a D maybe. But I mean, there was times where there was just failed class after failed class after failed, you know.
Got it. So no matter what, yeah. These A's are a departure. This is like, you know, if we're looking at your transcript, our eyes bug out first quarter senior year. Okay, so help us understand. What the hell happened there?
Well, I think I was... Well, I had found a university that I really wanted to go to, which was at the time wasn't like a completely, you know, unrealistic, crazy, lofty goal. You know, as long as I did well, that semester, just to show, you know, that I was improving or something like that, and I couldn't explain it in my personal statement. So I found a university that I wanted to go to, you know, a couple of them, and I was realizing how immediate, you know, college was, and, like, there was only a year left, and I was excited. I was really excited about it to get, you know, like, really, like, clean slate. Like, that's, you know, as clean as you can get there.
Right, so, brand fresh new start coming in a year when I start college.
Yeah.
Was it realistic, in retrospect, was it realistic to think, you know, given my record of the last 3 years, I could start getting A's now and get into a school I want to go to?
Yeah, well, the school that I chose was a small, kind of like unknown.
Got it.
Like a really small, unknown university. So, and it wasn't completely unrealistic for me to, you know, as long as I worked hard and kind of had like other things to back it up instead of, you know, just relying on grades as, you know, a lot of people do.
So you make this decision, you're going to college and suddenly the future looks bright, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see where the energy comes from, like, oh, you know what? I'm going to give this all I've got.
Yeah.
Where does the anxiety go though? Right. Because what's kept you from school hasn't been, you know, oppositionality or attention deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. It's been anxiety. How did you master that anxiety enough to get to school, or what was the tipping point there?
I don't know. Well, I always wanted to go to college. So just saying, like, that was never in question, like the whole high school and everything. Like, I always aspired to go. But the anxiety went, I think I was just so focused on school, you know, I was bulldozing through this work. And I would just, there was no time for anxiety. And, you know, once there is the time for anxiety, it's when like the issues began second quarter, like when I got sick and then it crept in right away. There's no, you know, little grace period there.
Yeah.
You know, once I'm not like, you know, hammering out these assignments and I'm, you know, completely, you know, have a perfect ledger and, then, you know, it'll creep in and it'll wreck your life.
Wow. So interesting. So, the lesson sounds like there's an old adage, you've probably heard it, that idle hands are the devil's workshop. Mm-hmm. And I have a little faith in that, you know, like, I think the busier we are, even for us anxious people or for very depressed people, you know, like, the more we're doing things, the more we're engaged instead of just idle and focused on what plagues us, the better off we're going to be, the less symptomatic we're going to be. Was that true for you? Do you feel like, yeah, that first quarter, man, I was focused and working, and so I didn't have time, in a way, for anxiety?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like that having that goal, you know, of a university I really, really wanted to go to, that I had my heart set on, that it really, like, propelled me forward, you know, through the anxiety. And another thing that really helped was realizing that, you know, even if I was anxious, like, at, you know, because of my peers or like my teachers or like the administrators or anything like that, I realized, you know, working hard now, like, will allow me to never having to see them again. Like, I'll never have to see them again. So, like, the kind of the caring too much aspect of it kind of went out the window for that period of time.
So was it fortunate in a way that you recognized all this senior year and you knew, like, well, this is a 9-month process and I can kind of hold my breath through that. I can manage the anxiety. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to press through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really helped a lot.
It almost suggests to me, and I'll just tell you how I'm kind of natural reaction to what you're saying. It almost suggests that you're going to be uncomfortable for a while. Is that, you know, and part of me doesn't like that for you. Is that true, or do you feel like, no, it wasn't that uncomfortable once I realized that?
No, I think it was realizing, like, how that I didn't have to care anymore because I wouldn't see these people anymore ever. So I thought it was more freeing mm-hmm. than it was uncomfortable, you know, just being able to get my work done
yeah.
and go home and, you know, wait for my time to come in college.
Bear with me here for just a second. When you talk about these people, I assume you're talking about the people at your high school, the mm-hmm. kids, the teachers, the administrators. Mm-hmm. What do these people represent to you? Because I hear this for the first time. I hear a little disdain in your voice.
Yeah.
what do these people reflect to you mm-hmm. in your mind?
There's no good reflections really. I mean, I had senior year. I had a couple of friends, but. Most of my friends didn't go to my high school. They lived, either far away or, there was maybe like one that was close, but there wasn't any at my actual school really. Most of the, the thoughts that I had about the people in the building,
right.
Were not good thoughts. Yeah.
Were people actively unkind mm-hmm. to you or?
No, not the peers, at least. No, yeah, not really. I think I was kind of just unnoticed or, no one really cared, at that point.
Yeah.
But
and is that, in retrospect, now that you've got a little bit of distance, mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's fair or do you feel like maybe I saw it wrong? Maybe these people were perfectly open to my connecting with them. I just never did.
Mm-hmm. Maybe because it could be that, but because I didn't really make too much of an effort to make like more friends
mm-hmm.
With just like random people, I guess, and that I didn't see or that I saw in like the hallways, just people I knew, but like I wasn't friends with because I figured, well, the whole like, well, I'm gonna be here for a year anyways, like,
right.
What's the point of making all these new friends and friendships were already well established, even freshman year. So
right.
It's not, I just didn't see the, the value in making all these new friends for, a couple of months. And then
thinking back, so sometimes I work with kids and, when they're in high school, and they are alone and they truly feel alone and disconnected, and rudderless. One connection that feels pretty strong, guy, girl, same class or different, one connection sometimes feels like it makes all the difference, right? That I have an ally in this building. Even if there are 4,000 people in here, mm-hmm. there's one person at least that I know has my back that I could turn to. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that would have made a difference for you?
It could have. It could have made me more comfortable or maybe just more okay to go to school than I was, but I think the deal was sealed pretty much by senior year.
So we're already at second, right? We're yeah. at the second quarter of senior year, and you yeah. feel like you've kind of made up your mind. Mm-hmm. You've got a mission, mm-hmm. and you are hell bent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then second quarter hits. What mm-hmm. happens second quarter?
Well, as it usually starts, I got sick. Just like a normal sickness. I don't remember really what it was, but I was actually sick, so
yeah.
I had legitimate reason not to be there, but. But then, the questions start coming, where were you? And obviously I was sick that time, so I could say I was sick, but, since I had this track record of not being there, then the administrators and everyone, they're, always, hounding me, oh, where were you, blah, blah, blah.
Were you seeing a social worker regularly, too? Were there a lot mm-hmm. of adults kind of, when you were there, mm-hmm. kind of checking in on you, asking
yeah,
you questions?
Yeah, there was fairly a good amount of, people, asking me and, where were you, all these things. So I got sick, and I missed, I think, a couple of days or something. And then I went back, and it was okay, whatever. But then I had to make up the work. And then the work that was missing wasn't getting in. And then the work that was, you know, current work wasn't getting in. I was, you know, getting anxious because there was, like, no work getting in because I was, you know, I was so overwhelmed with how much work that there was. And it just all spiraled, you know.
Feels like, from the first podcast, this feels like a very familiar part of your story, right? Mm-hmm. This is not new to you. Mm-hmm. And does it continue for the next, you know, semester and a half? Do things just spiral?
For that second quarter, first semester, it did. And then I didn't stick around much the second semester.
So what did you do instead? Second semester, you came up with, from what I recall, a pretty clever answer to the problem of not making it to school and not wanting to go.
Yeah. Well, I've been, you know, toying with the idea of going to an online high school, like an actual online high school, for a little while. There was a – what was it? Oh, I got a letter in the – in the mail because I didn't go back after winter, you know, holiday break. So I got a letter in the mail a little bit after that saying, if you don't come back, or then we're going to just kick you out and you're going to be expelled. And I was really angry and frustrated. And I just decided that moment, like, without a doubt, I'm like, all right, I'm transferring. Because I knew that if I was expelled, that that would be on my record that you were expelled. So I'm like, you know what? You know, to hell with it. I'm transferring. So I transferred to the online high school in almost the very beginning, like end of January. It was like March, I think.
Yeah.
So I just transferred and that was it.
So it strikes me that you had a lot of work to do. You had a bunch of classes to make up for, right? And those, if you're going to go to the college of your choice, that time is fast approaching. How many classes do you have to take in the online high school? Is it a blitz? Is it like I have to do a ton of work in a really short period of time and I have to do it well in order to get into this place?
Yeah. Even though I started, you know, in second semester, you know, March, I had to still complete a year's worth of classes because I had to be in that online high school for, like, you had to do the equivalent of a year's classes to graduate with their degree.
So this is March of your senior year. Mm-hmm. You recognize I have a year of classes to do between now and the next couple of months in order to start in a different place in September.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. What happened?
So I had those 10 classes to do. And so I just did them as quickly as I possibly could. And I finished online high school. And I remember distinctly that in that meeting that I had with, like, the assistant and principal, the principal, counselor, social worker, you know, all these people, that they said that I wouldn't be able to finish it. And I was like, well, I just remember thinking, well, let me prove you wrong, because I knew that I would thrive in that scenario, since there wasn't any kind of pressure, really. There was more freedom for me to choose when I'm doing these things, and, you know, if I want to go on, you know, a work binge, I could work from, you know, 4 p.m. to 5 a.m. the next morning. I couldn't do that if I want to. Like, there's no real, like, restrictions of, like, things that I have to meet, like, at certain times. Like, I can just do it when I'm ready.
Got it. So you had full – talk about control.
Yeah.
You had full control over the process, unlike high school where you're there. So this to me speaks to allowing yourself, or allowing your child, I suppose, to – be inventive and be creative and maybe trust that they know themselves really well. So here's this guy who on paper, and please take no offense to this, Matthew, looks like, if you're looking objectively and he's telling you, okay, it's March 2016, in the next couple of months I'm going to pass 10 classes, when in fact in the past 5 years nothing like that has happened, and yet you know it. I can understand being skeptical about that, and you knew for a fact you were going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
Just for the record, what grades did you get in those 10 classes?
I think I got all A's and I got a B.
All A's and a B.
Yeah.
What'd you get the B in, man? That B's a bummer.
Yeah, it was an 89 in civics. Yeah.
So all A's and a B.
Yeah.
So this is the best you had done in school since seventh grade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is an accurate reflection mm-hmm. now all of a sudden of what your capacity is. Mm-hmm. And you did it in no time. You were willing to work really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anybody out here, kids, parents, anybody listening who thinks laziness is some kind of trait or something, Matthew, set them straight, man.
Yeah. It's definitely not a trait. It's not a trait. It's more of, if it's anything, it's a symptom of a bigger problem.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. And for you, it was a symptom of anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what looked like lazy, opting out, oppositional and angry, was just anxiety. Mm-hmm. And once you were able to strip some of the variables away, mm-hmm. you thrived like you knew you could.
Yep.
Yep. Love the story. Mm-hmm. All right. So now it gets interesting. As if it hasn't been interesting so far. You alluded to a school you wanted to go to. Now, Matthew and I are talking to you from a sleepy little suburb of Chicago. So one would think, like a lot of my clients and people I've known, that Matthew is thinking about going to maybe the University of Illinois or Illinois State or, something, maybe go crazy and we're going to go to Indiana or Michigan or something like that. Where is it that you wanted to go?
Well, my aspirations were to go to a full-time degree in Europe, actually. Yeah.
And you were this is beyond aspirational, mm-hmm. right? This is still the plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Still. Yeah.
Why not make it easy for yourself? Right. You have options within 2 hours of home. Mm-hmm. People exercise them all the time. Most of the people you went to high school with are mm-hmm. going a stone's throw from home, and mm-hmm. At the wildest ends, they might be going to the coasts, right? Mm-hmm. Why are you going to Europe for college, man?
Well, I've always loved traveling, and I've been traveling, my whole life, and I really thought that it'd be really unique opportunity for me to go and live somewhere else than mm-hmm. here and get a different perspective for 4 years. And I just thought it was the right, decision for me just to try a different system than the American one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you always known yourself this well? Like, I always figure, like somebody who, knows something about that, I want to live in France, usually I think you need a lot of like life experience and, having gone through a few trials and tribulations, here you are. You've known this. This isn't news, right? I mean, you've known you wanted to live in Europe for quite some time.
Yeah.
Or somewhere other than right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always, been interested in that. And I think I've been pretty, one thing that's been pretty, solid about me is I've always known what I've been interested in. Even since I was little, I've always been curious of other places and people and things like that.
Do you feel like all along, and I don't want to indict anybody's parents, anything, do you feel like those interests could have been fostered somehow? And does your anxiety relate directly to them?
Well, my interests, I think they were fostered pretty well because we traveled a lot. We didn't travel crazy, like how people, sometimes are homeschooled in Africa or something like that. But we did travel, not to Europe, but, within North America.
Right.
So we did that. So that was fostered pretty well. I was never super, discontent sitting in my, my house the entire summer doing nothing. But it might relate to my anxiety a little in the sense that, I spent 5, 6 years in one place feeling a certain way, just not wanting to live those feelings over and over again. Just
repeat those patterns emotionally.
Yeah. And just walking through, just where I live, having to relive everything and just not being able to really like close the door on that when you have to see, you know, the place where it all happened, like every day when you drive past or something.
The
like
scene that. Of the crime, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've wondered at times whether your wanderlust has anything to do with your ethnic or racial heritage. People can't see you. Mm-hmm. Do you mind describing?
Yeah, well, it's interesting since I am adopted, actually.
Yes.
Since, you know, when I was a baby, so there was never a surprise to me. My parents always told me I was adopted, so there was never a shock moment.
They always told you?
Yeah, since I was born.
Can I stop you there for mm-hmm. just a second? So when I work with kids who are adopted, there's a range of reactions to that. Oftentimes, I hear exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hey, this is my family. I'm not really interested or looking for my birth mother or father. There isn't some hole in my soul that needs to be filled. I don't need to see that person that looks mm-hmm. like me in order to understand who I am. But on occasion, I do hear that. I do hear, like, you know, I don't feel whole because I don't know, you know, biologically, I don't know that person I mm-hmm. came from or those people I came from. That's far more rare. But there have been some people in my office who have been there strictly because of that. What do you make of that, and what do you think the difference is? Why do you think that's not critical to you?
Well, I think the main part is that I haven't known any different. You know, I think the issues begin. I always think, you know, someone who's adopted, that just, you know, being honest straight off the bat is probably the best way to go. Because I just haven't known any different. Like, you know, if a child who has terrible vision, you know, finally gets glasses, like, you know, they wouldn't know they had bad vision because that's what they've always known.
That's a good point.
So, like, I haven't known any different, and I'm fine with it. You know, I don't really have, like, if my birth mother got in contact with me and was like, do you want to meet? I'd be like, okay. But, I mean, there's not really a huge drive
for
me to find out anything.
Okay, so, and you were kind of in the center of a story there. So mm-hmm. you're adopted, mm-hmm. And you were talking mm-hmm. a little bit about your mm-hmm. your heritage.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, raised Mexican since my mother's Mexican, and, you know, so I've always felt, you know, distinctly Mexican, and, you know, because I spent a lot of time with my grandparents when I was little, my mother's parents, mm-hmm. And then my dad is, you know, Irish, so there was, you know, a lot of, you know, American Irish in that too as well, but, you know, Irish is like Irish from Ireland is different from American Irish, you know, but yeah, I took a DNA test I think a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
like 4 years ago maybe, and I figured out, you know, oddly that my, you know, heritage was, you know, Mexican, Irish, and French, so it was kind of odd that I had the Mexican and Irish in there.
So in a way, you matched your parents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've known a lot of 16-year-olds mm-hmm. in my day. I've never known anybody to deliberately mm-hmm. take a DNA test. Mm-hmm. How did you decide mm-hmm. you wanted to know that?
I was just interested. I was definitely hesitant, especially because I didn't want to find out that I wasn't actually Mexican. That was, like, my main fear because because I was raised that way, so I didn't want to be, like, kind of lost and confused and all of that.
And that, when you talk about that, about being Mexican, that's mm-hmm. that feels so deeply mm-hmm. meaningful. Mm-hmm. Do you think part of that is that you're not in Mexico? You know, I always wonder, like, you know, like, I don't think very much about my mm-hmm. heritage, you know. You know, I'm Irish as well, mm-hmm. but it doesn't hold the same meaning. When you talk about it, it feels like there's weight to it, mm-hmm. that it's really like part of who you are. When you mm-hmm. talk about being Mexican, mm-hmm. it's the same, maybe more so, I think. Mm-hmm. This is an important part of your identity, yeah?
Yeah, it definitely is. It just always has been. And I was definitely happy to see that on the results. Yeah, it's central, I would say. I would say most, you know, Latino people would say that as well, that their identity is central to who they are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've talked so much about your anxiety mm-hmm. and where you went to school and things. certainly not a Latino rich area, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were with a lot of people who looked more like me than you.
Yeah.
Was that difficult or was that great for you? What was that like?
I mean, it wasn't difficult really or great. I don't think it made a huge impact because I was so anxious all the time. I didn't really have time to worry that much about, you know, race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the midst of this election year, and you and I have talked a little bit about this, you know, and there's all this talk about whether you build walls and borders and things like that. And I think about you pretty frequently when I hear some of the rhetoric, because you feel to me like a guy who you feel borderless to me. I mean, you know, but you've talked about going to school in France or Ireland or, you know, and I can imagine there are other European nations. I think you mentioned Germany at one point. And there's something that feels so healthy about that when you talk about it. You know, I hate to shift into something, you know, so wildly different. But does that resonate with you? Do you feel like, yeah, I kind of like to think of the world as kind of this open place where anybody should be able to live anywhere?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely, you know, see myself as like a global citizen. Just, you know, being so, like, you know, diverse ethnically, you know, with, you know, French, Irish, Mexican is kind of, you know, a unique combination there.
There's probably not meetings for guys who are French, Irish, and Mexican, right?
So it's definitely, you know, unique. But, you know, and I've traveled a lot, so that definitely fostered and, like, you know, grew my wanderlust. But I think it was pretty, you know, it was a part of me, you know, even if I hadn't traveled.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely see myself that way.
Yeah. Given that, what do you picture your future feeling like? Like, I get that you picture, I'm going to go to college in Europe. And, you know, given that I'm sitting across from a guy who took 10 classes in about 2.5 months or so and aced all but one of them and came this close to acing that last one, I have no doubt that you are going to make that happen. But what do you think it's going to feel like? You know, so you've lost some things here, right? I mean, what do you feel like you've lost, first of all?
Well, I've lost, you know, obviously grades and school-wise, I lost that. I lost friends, definitely, you know, peers. I lost, well, basically the entire high school experience, you know, the whole thing you see in movies, I didn't have at all.
It's brutal to hear that, Matt. To what degree do you lament all that, right? Because it does feel like instead of having this kind of like enriching growth-oriented experience where, you know, you show what you can do in the classroom. You're a musician and you show what you can do on that stage and you're a connecting guy. You're a likable guy. I think you know that. And yet you really are disconnected even to this day from peers. It's heartbreaking to hear. And it seems like such a tough thing to rise above. Do you think it's going to be as easy? Do you think it's going to be pretty simple?
I don't think it'll be like too terribly different, especially going into college, because I think I'm craving to kind of, not like relive or, but just to have like my time in my, you know, to start my life. So I think I'm eager to get out there and actually do it instead of, you know, reliving or having to deal with anything that I did in high school.
Yeah. So your intent is a hard reset. I'm going to start over. So I'll go back to my original question. What do you think your life's going to feel like a year from now, two, five?
Well, I think it'll be good. I have definite high hopes just, you know, with my plans and the progress I've made in, you know, even just this short amount of time. I definitely have high hopes.
What do you picture, what role, if you're inviting anxiety into your life on an ongoing basis, what role do you picture anxiety playing in your life?
I don't know, you know, if it'll always be there or if it'll, you know,
dissipate.
Go away or anything like that. But I definitely see it, you know, even to this, you know, this day right now, it you know, subsiding, you know, more like each day it gets a little bit less.
Yes.
Just, you know, changing my, you know, thought process and all that have helped to kind of minimize it. Mm-hmm. You know, even just like, even if it's just a little bit, it makes a huge difference in how you feel.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, in these coming years, I think it'll just, you know, snowball, you know, into getting better and better and better until, you know, the best it can be.
Mm. So I love the message of hope that you have here. And I assume that's part of the reason you joined me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is it's never too late. Mm-hmm. Right. So here we are. And high school, I think you would argue, pretty much of a bust. But yeah. College, mm-hmm. you refuse to repeat that.
Yeah.
And anxiety may play a role. But I think you feel like, I'm going to learn as I go to manage this. So you have this scope you can picture. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that people hear that, you know, like, even if you feel like something's gripping you now, this isn't the end of your story. It doesn't have to be, right? And you get to write the story going forward. And nobody is more on that than you, Matthew. I do believe that despite having a whole slew of authors that some of them uninvited in your life, you feel like, to me, like the author of your story, I have no doubt that you're right, that it gets better for you going forward. I'm excited for you, and I appreciate you being here again. I hope people listen and hear those underlying messages that you bring. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. My thanks again to future global citizen Matthew. And you can find this podcast featuring Matthew on iTunes, on WGN Plus, on Podbean, and on Stitcher. If you have any thoughts about what we might cover on the podcast, I want you to let me know. So give me a quick email at johngduffy@aol.com. And if you are a parent and interested in improving your parenting and getting some thoughts and tips from somebody who's been at this for a while, you can find a free parenting program on my website at drjohnduffy.com. I so appreciate your time here, and I hope it has been useful for you. On behalf of Matthew and myself, thank you for joining us. I will talk to you next time. Have a great day.